On this episode, Dwight and Adrian pay tribute to Sir Sean Connery. Connery passed on October 30th, 2020, and we wanted to take the opportunity to reflect upon his imprint on cinematic history. While most will forever regard Connery as the definitive James Bond in beginning the titular franchise, his filmography is rich with other roles equally as memorable. From James Bond, to an aged Robin Hood, to espousing the Chicago way, to commanding a Russian nuclear submarine, Connery will forever be remembered for the incredible charisma and authority that he brought to the screen. As always, thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to the show at sidebarforever.com or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back to Sidebar Forever.
Yes, yes. My co-host, Dwight Clark, mentioned, welcome back to Sidebar. I'm the other co-host, Adrian Johnson. And we just wanted to come back with a brief tribute to one of the greatest actors to ever do it. You know, just passed away this past week. Yeah, yeah. And that would be a, yes, Sir Sean Connery.
Yep.
Or Sir Thomas Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
There you go. There you go. Put some respect on his name. Yeah, definitely. That's it. Definitely. Yeah. But yeah, he just passed this weekend, I believe on Friday, on October 30th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. October
30th. Yeah. Yeah. And he just had, obviously, a heavily lauded career, you know, in acting, absolutely one of the most recognizable people in the world, you know, really.
Easily.
You know, anytime.
Easily.
Yeah. Just like throughout his life, you know, once he became James Bond and, you know, once he became older, instantly recognizable, you know, no matter where he was at. Yeah.
He aged well. He aged very well, you know.
Oh, he absolutely did, man. You know, it was funny. I was in dialysis yesterday, and one of the nurses was talking about him, you know, to me. We were discussing Connery, and he was just saying, you know, he was like, man, and he was an older guy himself. Like, he's in his 70s, the nurse.
Right.
And he was like, man, you know, when Connery was in Hunt for Red October,
yes, man.
I was like, that's a handsome guy.
Right.
When I get... He was like, I wish I had aged like he did. Like, the way he looked in, like, you know, Hunt for Red October, very distinguished and everything. That I think that's how we would all hope to look, just as good as him, just still vibrant and full of life and, you know, with authority, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. One of the things about him is he always commanded, he always had a commanding presence, man. Like, you knew he was there. He was a charismatic figure. And you always felt as though you're in good hands with him, regardless whether he was a Russian Soviet captain of a nuclear submarine or not, you know?
All right, well, a little background on Connery. He was actually born in 1930, obviously in Scotland. And you know what else I found out, Dwight?
What's that?
You know, Highlander is obviously one of our favorite movies. We just did an episode on Highlander, obviously, you know, of course. Do you know that there really is a Clan MacLeod in Scotland, and it's a part of Connery's bloodline by way of his mother?
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, oh,
that's
man,
crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, his mother, her bloodline goes back to the actual Clan MacLeods, and they actually have a certain design of kilt, like it's a tartan design with like green and black. So I was like, what?
That's impressive, man. That's impressive.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Man, to think you really trace your lineage back that far, it's pretty incredible, man. You know, that's I went to his website the other day, and on his website he's posing in his kilt.
His tartan. For sure.
Yeah, we got to paste that, man, as part of the images. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, man. And he served in the British Navy after World War II, I think about 46 through like 49. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
In real life. Yeah, yeah.
And then he got into acting kind of throughout the 50s. Once he left the Navy, he started in theater, and he started getting like bit roles in the theater, and then soon in like British television, British theater, and things like that. And like his breakout, well, I wouldn't say a breakout, but like his first kind of starring role was in Darby O'Gill in The Little People. Yeah, I think that was in 59. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Slick black hair. Yeah. Good.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and that's the thing that you keep reading when you read like account, especially of like the women that crossed him. They're like, oh, he was dark haired and muscular. Right. And so charismatic.
Right.
You know.
An obvious choice for James Bond. I mean, he.
Exactly. And you know, the crazy thing is that leading up to James Bond, the producers at first, even the author, Ian Fleming, was like, well, he doesn't look like how I describe James Bond. You know, he doesn't have the eyes and that kind of, you know, the physical description. But apparently, once Ian Fleming saw Dr. No, he was like, okay, never mind. My bad.
Right.
He'll do.
Right.
Yeah, man. Go ahead, man.
Wait, is that poker scene where he's sitting in the casino and the first time the lady asked him, and who are you, sir?
I admire your luck, Mr.
Bond. James Bond.
And he lights a cigarette. Bond. James Bond. You know?
Oh, yeah. Just like, so smooth. Come on, bro. It's over.
Game over, man. Yeah, man.
Man, so smooth. He ended up making like, seven Bond movies, you know, over the years. And, you know, the thing is that he said that as a result of that, even though it brought him, obviously, worldwide fame and just, you know, instant recognition and everything,
he hated it.
Because he was like, he couldn't walk down the street without somebody yelling, there's James Bond, you know. And that's so crazy because people today are so hungry for fame. And they're just like, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with being recognized? You know?
Sometimes
you just want to live your life, man. You're not that character, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's back then, man, it was like in so many other creative fields, it was the job. You know?
Right.
I mean, it wasn't about the fame, it was a job. I do this for a living. I enjoy doing it. I'm glad you enjoy the world that I'm immersed in, but it's just a job. So, you know, calm down, fanboy or fangirl, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, definitely an old school ethic there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But before we get too much farther, man, what was your first experience with Connery? Like, what did you first encounter him in?
It was Goldfinger, man. It was Goldfinger for me. Where he's like that critical role where he's like what do you expect me to do? You expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Right.
that dope laser on the bed where it's coming real close to his crotch. Classic, man. Classic Bond scenario.
Yeah, man. When I was little, that's probably the thing that I remember most too, as far as like my first experience with Connery, is obviously like the James Bond movies. Like they were always, for some reason, when I was growing up, come on Sunday morning on TBS at like 10:35 every Sunday morning. But I remember Time Life or somebody like that had a commercial where they were selling like a collection of the Bond movies on VHS when I was growing up.
Right.
And they would play that clip every single time in the commercial to end the commercial.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh man, this is cool. So that was my first experience as well, you know, just with the Bond movies with him.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just always a presence, you know? Even when he would sneak, I hate to say sneak, but they would kind of give him cameos. You weren't expecting him, you know?
Right.
He seemed to love to do that because he did a lot of cameos over the years. Like, for instance, There was a movie when I was also when I was a kid called Sword of the Valiant. It came out in 84.
Okay.
With I know I'm going way deep here. It starred Miles O'Keefe as the knight, as the Green Knight or whatnot.
Okay.
And at the end of the movie, Connery shows up, you know.
Okay.
Kind of like, wow, I wasn't expecting him. Oh, man, wow.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I kind of wish that that first night had been more of a situation where it was it wasn't the greatest Arthurian tale.
No, it wasn't. No, a Kung Fu Sir Lancelot? No. Come on, Richard. Come on, Gear. Come on, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get it because, I mean, who's at that time, who was more noble than Sir Sean Connery? It was just not. And it looked low budget as far as the costuming and stuff goes. Like, come on, man. This is like some, you know, dime store. I put this together with foam core, coral buff type stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, running down the list of movies that he had over the years, man. I mean, we got Dr. No in 62.
Right.
From Rush with Love in 63.
Right.
Goldfinger. The aforementioned Goldfinger in 64.
He's a man, the man with a diamond touch. Doom, 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 doom. Yeah, yeah.
You don't go in.
Yeah, man. Great stuff.
That shit is dope.
It really
man.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he worked with Alfred Hitchcock in 1964 with Marnie. And I tried to watch Marnie, man, as a kid. And I was expecting James Bond because he still had the gray suit and everything, right?
Right, right.
So I'm thinking, okay, why isn't he doing Bond-type
stuff,
things?
Right?
What's going on?
Yeah. He was definitely typecast, man, after doing Bond, man. There's no way in the world he could break that mold, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. In 65, he did a movie called The Hill. 67, You Only Live Twice, which for the longest time was my favorite Bond movie because he went to Japan in that one. Yeah.
Yes. It was dope, man.
Yeah, man.
I like Thunderball too, man. Thunderball is awesome, man.
Oh, that's right. How did I skip over Thunderball? Oh, crap.
Sir.
Yeah, Thunderball, 1965. Yeah. Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah, man. When he crashed that fighter plane into the water and he had to go in the water to get it and he was fighting underwater. Man, I love that, man. I love that, man. I wanted to
Yeah, and then like the underwater man, the underwater fight between the two sides
man.
With
that
man.
That was incredible, man. That was incredible. Great stuff, man. Great scenic material.
Heck yeah, mm-hmm. man. Then he did Diamonds Are Forever in 1971. Yeah. And that one I'm like,
But that was like that was when I first was that the one where I'm trying to think where he had the lady in the purple bikini? Let me look at that, man. I'll tell you in a minute, but keep going.
Okay, now it is the one where the where he had where there were the two flamboyant assassins that were trying to kill him.
Okay.
Yeah, if you remember that.
That was it. That was it. Yeah, Jill St. John, man. Yeah, because that was...
Jill St. John.
Man.
Ooh, bro.
Wow. I think I felt myself for the first time as a young man, bro, with that one, yo.
Yeah, your nature was rising. I feel you, yo. I didn't feel you, but you know what I'm saying.
right. And I was young, dude. I was like maybe like... I was super young. I think my brother had just been born at that point, man. So I was like,
oh wow, okay,
like 4 years old. But I knew at that point, it's about the Vimmons, yo, Vimmons for me, yo.
Yeah, yeah, yo, something going on, yeah, man.
Right.
And you know the thing I remember about that movie, man, where two assassins they corner Jill St. John and Bond on a cruise ship.
Right,
they've been trying to kill him throughout the movie. And so they try to get him one more time, and Bond like tucks a sheet or a napkin underneath the dude's crotch, and the dude's like, ooh! And he flips him over,
board. Oh my God, that was so hilarious. What?
Yeah, man. It's like him gave him a wedgie and threw him overboard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Ooh. Oh man.
You know, there's a couple times I've seen that face, man, when it's happened. It was kind of funny. It also happened not Thunderball, but in Thunderdome. Where the character in Thunderdome gets hit in the head by the frying pan, and is like a crazy looking, you know, Mad Magazine face, man.
Mad Magazine. Oh man, boy, that was hilarious, man.
Yep.
All right, so then in 74,
we digress, right?
Yeah, absolutely, as we always do.
Right, that's part of the fun of it.
But yeah, man. So in 74, he does a movie that I've never seen, but obviously I've seen the costume for it. That movie, okay. Zardoz. The one where he's wearing that red thong and the straps and just looking crazy.
Is it the Manchurian,
They like kind of that Fu Manchu or whatever? Yeah.
It's weird. Dang,
Sean, what the hell?
That was one of his most iconic visual roles, I think, man, at that time. Yeah.
Just for that red costume. Yeah. I guess he really wanted to get away from Bond, and he really did.
Right, he moved hard towards away from it, that's for sure.
Yeah, hard left. Then in 1974, also, A Murder on the Orient Express.
Okay.
Yeah, an adaptation of the Agatha Christie novel.
Right.
The classic Agatha Christie novel. Then in 75, he has The Wind and the Lion and A Man Who Would Be King, you know. And I need to see those because I've always heard great things about those movies, man.
Yeah,
like, those are just good movies. Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
76, you got Robin and Marion, where he co-starred with Audrey Hepburn.
Oh.
And he was an aged Robin Hood, still fighting against the Sheriff of Nottingham, played by Robert Shaw, you know, from Quint from Jaws. Yeah, Quint from Jaws. And and I still want to see that too. Like that period of Connery's work, I really need to acquaint myself with, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah,
because it really looked like he was enjoying himself, you know, in terms of taking other roles outside of just being typecast, you know?
Yeah.
77, he did A Bridge Too Far, a World War II drama.
Right.
That's a long ass movie, but I love it. I love those World War II epics. In 81, he did Outland.
Yeah, that's and they yes. they did an adaptation of that. A comic adaptation.
Storenko
did. Yeah.
And that's how I knew of the movie. Right? Yeah.
was it in Epic magazine or was it in Heavy Metal? It's one of those two.
I think it was in Heavy Metal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was good, man. It was good.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
See, I've never seen the movie. Like, I've only known the comic adaptation.
Right.
And I've always wanted to just go back and see the movie itself.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's kind of slow at times, but it's very dark. But it's cool, and it's definitely not James Bond. That's for sure. I mean, this guy is more fallible.
Oh, okay.
He has more human issues, more human foibles and whatnot. He does things, but he's pretty cool. Result.
Oh, okay, cool. And speaking of James Bond, he did reprise the role one more time after this with Never Say Never Again in 1983.
Right.
And, you know, I almost don't even count that as a Bond movie because he's too old for the role now.
Okay.
It's just like, No. Then he's trying to, the scene I remember is him trying to play this crazy ass video game with the villain of the movie, you know, and it's just like, so it's the yes, yeah, they're sitting at a tabletop table,
okay,
a tabletop table, they're sitting at a tabletop, right, and they're holding joysticks. And this was 83, so it's at the very beginning of like the video game craze, you know, arcades stuff. So I guess they tried to sneak that
in.
And I just remember him playing this crazy game opposite of the villain, so they, I guess they're having a tete-a-tete against each other,
right.
You know, or whatever. Just, and the other thing that I
Wait, go ahead.
Is this the one where he fights off against Blofeld and he dumps Blofeld into the smokestack? I don't know.
No, that was actually the one before this with Roger Moore.
That's right, yeah.
Whichever one that was. Right. Yeah, right. Threw him off a helicopter. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Like, dang.
Right?
Oh, man. But you know, the other crazy thing I just found out about Never Say Never Again,
What's that?
I read that Connery broke his wrist during the filming of the movie, right? But to get the crazy reason, though, his wrist was broken because he was rehearsing a fight scene with the fight choreographer on the movie, who was, wait for it, Steven Seagal.
What? Seriously? That's crazy.
Yes.
Man.
Steven Seagal. I was like, oh, come on, bro.
Wow.
Damn, you gonna break James Bond's wrist, Joe?
He did it on purpose, Joe. He did it on purpose because he's hating on him, bro. He's like, I could have done those damn James Bond movies. Look at my steely gaze. I could raise my eyebrow, too.
Oh, bro, I was like, dang, yeah, Steve, come on, man, bro, damn.
Just imagine a world wherein, in a world, when freaking Steven Seagal is James Bond, dude.
But you know what, when I was 10, I could have, because I like Steven Seagal.
Right.
But now, hell no.
Right.
Man, getting back on point, yo.
Yeah, man. So, I want to give a special shout out to Name of the Rose,
which is
one of my favorite films of all time, Umberto Eco.
Oh yeah,
yeah, man, definitely.
Yeah, man.
It starred a younger version of what's his name that played it now plays in
Christian Slater.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah, man. But
he was good in this. I liked him in that. Yes.
He was really good in it, man. It was a whole thing wherein, you know, he was a monk's apprentice, a squire, I guess you can call him, whatever it was, maybe. It was deep, man. It was deep. You got to see like the true nature of like the haves and have nots and how that whole century, that whole time period was like really, really disparate in terms of those people which had access to things, those people which didn't have access to things, and the inner workings of the sanctity of monkdom. You know, it was crazy. You know, people turned up dead, and they had to, you know, figure out. His role was as a detective, and he had to figure out how to, you know, solve the crime and who was killing all these monks. And
yeah, man. I first came across that my history teacher when I was in 10th grade. Mm-hmm. We had an after school movie club where he would show historical movies.
Nice.
And so Name of the Rose was one of those that he brought one day. And, you know, everybody else kind of like dissipated, and because you could leave at will.
Right,
like,
right.
Oh, I got to go, whatever. I sat there and watched it, man. I was like, this is really good.
Yeah, man.
You know,
yeah,
and so ever since then, I've you know, caught it on cable or whatnot.
Right.
It's like it's very good. I think it's one of the underrated movies in Connery's body of work. Just real cool.
Yeah, really, man. Good. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. And then and that was 86, and also in 86 comes our movie.
There can only
be one.
That's it.
Highlander.
Right. Don't lose your head. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
Ramirez. Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah, man. Incredible, man. You'll haggis.
Haggis. Right? How revolting.
Right. You'll peacock.
Man.
Which is funny now that you mention it, man. Sean Connery, the person actually knew what haggis was.
Yes.
You know? I wonder if he actually had that written into the role, you know, or if he was able to give them some insight as to what Scottish, you know, foods were and where they knew already automatically.
That you know what? I suspect that's probably what happened. Just, you know, of course he knew what haggis was, and it was just kind of like an in joke. You know, I'm sure he loved haggis.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
But his character being from, you know, Spain or whatnot wouldn't know what it was. But yeah.
Exactly.
So it was, probably a cool in joke.
Yeah, man.
Then in 87, you got. Yeah, in 87, you got The Untouchables.
Yes. Doo-doo-doo.
Directed by Brian De Palma.
Doo-doo-doo.
Yes. Doo-doo-doo.
dun 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 dun. Oh man. That was a cool movie. I loved that when I was a kid. Yeah. Me and my mom would watch that. She popped the tape in, and we'd be sitting there just watching it, man. You know.
And he won an Academy Award for that.
He sure did. Yeah. Deservedly so. Yeah. That's one of his best roles, man. Malone. Yeah, Jim Malone.
Yeah.
It's the Chicago Way. Right?
Yeah. That's it. Chicago, that's it, yo. Chicago Way, yo.
Yeah, man. It's
like, just like to bring a gun to a knife fight.
Yeah, man. But man, he went out. Oh, he went out hard man.
Yeah, man.
Oh,
it was gut wrenching, man. Because you didn't want to see again. The two things happened in that situation, right? One is because he's Sean Connery and because he's James Bond, you're not used to seeing him die. You know,
right?
And so it hit you doubly hard because you liked the character that he was playing, and then in terms of him being James Bond, it's hard to watch him go out like that. And then essentially be like double teamed and assassinated. It was what happened, you know. It was wrong, you know. So
yeah, they were waiting on.
So it hit extra hard, man. Great role.
and you know the thing is too is that while you mentioned that, I'd read that he felt the same way. He didn't want all the squibs set up on him. He was like, man, why y'all got to put so many squibs on me? And I'm James Bond. So he tried to play that card.
Did he really?
But the problem was like, this is what the script is. We got it.
Right.
Let's just go with it.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Like Frank Nettie said, you're going to die today.
Frank Nitti.
Yeah. Yeah, yo. Nailed his ass too, man. Nailed his ass too in James and the Untouchables, man. He deserved it, bro.
Man. Yeah, so after Untouchables, we go to 1989 and another one of his signature roles. Mm-hmm. That is the father of Indiana Jones in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yeah,
Junior. Yes. Don't call me that.
Junior? Right? Y'all, man. They were such a great team in that movie. Ford and Connery, they really played off of each other. Well. Like, you really believed that they could be father and son. And I'll say as well, watching that movie will sometimes bring a tear to my eye. Like, because I'm a stickler, especially after my father's passing, for like that father-son dynamic. So when they're that close to the grail and the temple's collapsing all around them, and Indy's like, I got it, I can still get it. Right. And Connery's like, let it go. Yeah. Like, you're more valuable to me.
Right.
Just let it go. Yeah. And then Indy's like, that just gets me every time. He's like, man, you're more valuable to me, man. Just let it go, son. Mm-hmm. Let it go.
Yeah.
Damn!
Yeah, great moment.
Brings a tear to my eye, man.
Yeah, man, it's a great moment, man. That's what good movies do, man. They transcend the fact that they're on screen. You're watching them. They bring you into it for a moment that's, you know, capturable in time and markable, remarkable.
Yeah, man.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So after that, we go to 1990.
Okay.
Hunt for Red October, man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great role. That poster, man.
Oh man.
Man, that poster, man.
Oh. Iconic.
Yeah.
Iconic. The deep red, man. His face.
Yes, man.
The submarine shadow. Oh, yes,
that's all you needed. That's all you needed. You know, and it wasn't about him. It was you know, he was the main figure, but in the movie, it was about the kid. It was about
Jack Ryan?
Jack Ryan's character, you know. So it was like, which is played by one of the Baldwins.
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, and they played off each other very well. Like when they finally meet up near the end of the second act of the movie, and they finally start playing off of each other to get down to what is going on here. You know, they have some good interplay back and forth. You know what I'm saying? And it's funny how the movie. That's the other thing I wanted to mention. All of Connery's roles, they find some way to explain his accent.
Right.
He's playing an American. But he still has a Scottish accent, you know, so they found a way to explain that. And in Hunt for Red October, they try for like the first 5 minutes to speak Russian. Right. Everybody's speaking Russian. Right. Then they kind of zoom in on his lips and then he turns English and they pan back. It's like, no, going forward, he will be speaking English.
Yeah, he does Sean. That's what he does. You know, he's not gonna do anything else besides Sean. So we'll capture him at his best doing that. But I
yes, it was admirable
try. It was like that time when it didn't bother me that much because you're so into the role of the character. But it's like that time when in the beginning when Halle Berry's playing Storm and she's trying to speak I guess some kind of African dialect. It's like, okay, yeah, you don't do that too well. Let's just cut that. Just be Halle. Just be, you know, that's what he had to do for basically for Sean too, you know.
Yeah, just drop it.
Right, forget it. You know, kill the accent, you know.
Oh man. So going forward, also in 90 he had the Russia House, which I think was with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Okay. I didn't see that.
And then in 91, oh man. You know what I'm about to say. In 1991,
yeah.
the movie that should not be named, but we got to.
Will not be named. Yeah.
The Quickening. Well, I got to, D.
Name it with a quickening. Pass over it.
But for those that don't know, yes, Highlander 2, The Quickening, and you should quickly avoid it.
Yes. It does not exist in the lexicon. It was a mistake.
Yes, it does not exist. Yeah, yes.
Where he reprises the role of Ramirez, and...
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
That's all you need to know.
That's all you know.
Oh, man. But also in 91, he did a cameo. Like I was mentioning earlier, he's good for sneaking in those cameos. At the end of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, he played Richard the Lionheart. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll buy that. Like he always seemed like he was always a good coda to like those type of medieval movies. Like, not only do you get all this adventure, but at the end, we're going to sneak in a cameo of Sean Connery.
Okay,
I got my money's worth then. I'm good.
You're right. How much are you going to pay me? It's what it matters to me.
Oh, man.
$1 million, non-negotiable. Bearer's bonds.
Bearer's bonds.
James bonds.
Oh man. So in 92 you get Medicine Man.
Okay.
Directed by John McTiernan, you know, obviously of Die Hard and Predator fame and and Hunt for Red October. So you're thinking, oh, this might be good. If you've never seen it, don't worry about it.
The concept was good. But it didn't quite work out. There's another one after that that did the same thing. I think it started. I think it had his son Indy in it. It had Harrison Ford in it. That was along those lines of him going into.
I see.
Yeah, him going into I forget the name of the movie it was going in. It was.
You know what you're thinking about? You're thinking about Harrison Ford. You're thinking about that movie 40 Days. No. It's on the tip of my tongue. Harrison Ford is living in the jungle with his family, right?
Yes, that's it.
Is that what you're thinking
of? Yeah, that's the one.
Dang. It's on the tip of my tongue. Right. It's the...
Skip that.
Why watch it hit me after we get off the mics, man.
Of course.
Yeah, man. But anyway, in 93, I had actually forgot he did this until I looked over his filmography, man.
Okay.
He did Rising Sun... with Wesley Snipes, you remember that movie. Yes, based off of, it was an adaptation of the Michael Crichton novel.
Okay.
About, there was this murder and there's this Japanese corporation in California, in Los Angeles, and he plays a detective Connor, John Connor.
Right?
Yeah, man. And obviously Wesley Snipes is doing his early 90s Wesley Snipes thing where he just kung fu kicks everybody, you know what I'm saying?
Detective
Webb. And I thought they worked okay together. Like him and Snipes were kind of an unlikely pairing, but it kind of worked, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that.
Yeah. Then in 95, you got the aforementioned that you brought up, First Night.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. 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 96 brings you to Dragonheart,
yes,
where he voiced the character of the dragon Draco.
Right, and it, that was a step forward in cinematic technology too, in terms of the rotoscoping and making giving human features to and human qualities to a lizard, essentially, you know.
Oh, okay. So they kind of rotoscoped his face to match the facial expressions of the dragon, you're saying?
I think that's how it worked. Yeah, they used, but it's not okay. Technology used anymore. I think it's more like a question of, like, it's very crude, the dot technology used now, where they put the dots on your eyes and your face to measure the, you know, distances and things like that and see the facial expressions. But yeah, it was a leap forward in technology, and I think that was done by, you know, not Lucasfilms, but by THX, not THX.
ILM?
Yeah, it was leap forward.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, okay, yeah, okay.
So it was good for all that.
Cool. And then also in 96, we come to The Rock.
Oh,
Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage. Right. Ed Harris and Sean Connery.
Michael Bay. I blow shit up good.
Oh, he did. Like, that movie, I will admit, out of those Michael Bay movies, I kind of liked that one the best. Just, okay. I don't know, it just had everything working for it. And plus, you know, Connery, he makes a man out of Nicolas Cage, you know?
Right.
Just the way that he just, like, goads Nicolas Cage on Stanley Goodspeed, or whatever his name was.
You sure you're ready for this?
I'll do my best.
Your best? Losers always whine about their best. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
It's like, you're gonna do this? Or, you know, winners, they don't take no for an answer. They take it,
they go
home, and they fuck the prom queen. I was like, man, like, for real, yeah, if Connery was like your personal life coach, you would get so much stuff done.
Damn. That's definitely a role he missed out on, for sure.
Yeah, man, for real. Okay. And he was really good in The Rock, you know, just in terms of, you know, this secret agent who was on the run, kind of like shades of Bond, obviously.
Right.
And he was still spry. Like, it seemed like he was still able to get around, too, real good.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it was cool. It was cool to see him, you know, play opposite of Cage in that, you know? And then in 98, you have The Avengers. Yeah.
Right.
98, you have The Avengers.
Right.
Not Marvel's The Avengers.
The British Avengers.
Classic TV
series. The BBC Avengers, right.
Yes. Did you ever see that?
I didn't because I wanted to see. Mm. You know, I like the original with Emma Peel playing by you know, the
Diana Riggs.
Yeah, man. So that was my
rest in peace. She just passed away.
Definitely.
Yeah.
She did. Yeah, she was my jam. So I didn't really want to see anybody else reprise the role. You know, so I didn't watch it.
Gotcha. All right. Then in 99, you have Entrapment, where he played opposite of Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, and that was like a breakout role for her, actually, I think, because she was, you know, put on.
Oh, it was.
You know, Front Street and, you know, given a chance to show her feminine wiles and her abilities.
Yeah, and
her
wares.
Yeah,
man. You know, the thing I remember about that movie is the one that they played in, like, the commercials. I went to go see it in the theater, but the one where she's sliding under the lasers ever so sexily.
Yes.
Just
classic.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good stuff, man. Yeah.
Yeah, man. And they had pretty decent chemistry between them, Connery and Zeta-Jones, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think she's Welsh, so you have that kind of, you know, English, you know, thing going on, too.
Right, connection,
Yeah, man.
Could have been her instead of Michael Douglas, but, you know. No, just kidding.
Yeah, hey. Oh, man. So then in 2000,
he was married at the time already.
What's that?
For the second time. So, no, I'm saying that he was married already for the second time. So he wasn't interested in having a coup d'etat with her, you know, or anything like that. So
coup d'etat. Oh, man. All right. So then in 2000, we got You're the Man Now, Dog.
Yeah.
Finding Forrester.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Like that, I think the thing people remember about that movie is just the fact of that line right there, which has become a meme itself, you know. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Greg Manchez paint the painting of Forrester in that movie? Why do I feel like I remember him saying that, or I remember reading that somewhere? There's a painting of Sean Connery as Forrester that's in the movie, like it's hanging up. And I want to say that Greg Manchez painted that. I might be mistaken.
That you got me now, man. Now I got to do some research on that one, man, because I want to say it sounds right, but I'm thinking about the Timberline. And I'm thinking like maybe there's some conflation between the two. I don't know, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, because the reason I'm thinking that is that I remember way back when you and Swain interviewed Manchester on our previous incarnation, right. And he brought up finding Forrester, and he even says the line, "You're the man now, dog."
Right.
And you guys had a big laugh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm wondering why would he bring that up in context.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that. So, again, when I get off the mics, I'm going to look that up.
Exactly.
And I'm going to make sure, man, right. It's going to bug me
right,
now.
Right.
But, yeah. And then we come essentially to the end of Connery's career, which is really, this movie, he retired basically after this movie. And he said so.
Right.
That is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in 2003.
Yes, man.
And he said that after he did this, it was so much trouble. The director, Stephen Norrington, was so much trouble. The script, just everything about the production was so trouble. He said, "I am really too old for all of this." He did a Murtaugh. "I am too old for this shit."
Right,
and he retired.
Alan Quartermain.
Damn.
Yeah, yo. Yeah, he.
Oh, you know what? Now, Swain, if you listen to this, I owe you an apology. Swain had mentioned when Connery passed on Friday, we were mentioning the roles, us three, you know, back and forth, just, you know, kind of remembering him.
Right.
And Swain had said, "Oh, he was Alan Quartermain."
Right.
I was like, "No, he wasn't."
Yeah.
And I was adamant. "No, he wasn't."
Right.
But now that I see League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, yeah, he was. My bad, Swizz.
Right.
My bad, man.
Right. Hey, that's why you should be here. That's why you should be here, yo. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. and it's odd because Alan Quartermain basically was supposed to be immortal. To some degree, right? Wasn't he supposed to be immortal? Yeah, so because I think in the end of the Extraordinary Gentleman, when he's supposed to be dead, he actually, his hand pops out of the grave. And they were kind of posturing for, or posing for a possible, you know, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen too, you know, which would have been, no. It's one of those things where it was an interesting comic book adaptation of all these different characters from various parts of historical fiction, and it culminated into this pretty cool comic to read, but didn't really translate to film too well, even though they did a really good job, I think, with a lot of the character design. It's just that each one of those characters need room to breathe, and prose, you can think can breathe better than when you get on the landscape of a film, you know. So I think that's what part of the disservice that was done to it, you know, in a lot of ways. And comics, you're not dealing with charisma either, you know. Unless the characters have been like Wolverine charisma or Jean Grey charisma, or whatever the case may be. Those characters are built up over a number of years, and you know how they react based on how they're written. But you're not dealing with the humanistic equation of charisma. So you just read the books and interpret the way you want to. But with films, it's none of that. Film's all about the actor. You know, film's about the actors. You know, that's the problem with Tom Cruise playing different roles besides, I guess Ethan Hunt at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's because, you know, you know, you always see him as, you know, Ethan Hunt now at this point, you know? So.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I love the comics. You know, I think the comics are well done. You know, Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill. But like you said, just it did not work on film, man. Mm-hmm. Just, nothing doing, man. So there ended Connery's film career pretty much. And he officially went into retirement in 2006. in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. where he resided until his passing in 2020 on October 30th. Yeah. You know, so yeah, man. We just wanted to give tribute to like we said, one of the greatest to ever do it. You know, man. You know, just going back over the list. Over this list, D. Now I want to go back and watch a lot of this stuff. I got the Jones to watch a lot of that stuff now. Right. Seriously. Yeah. So I think the
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, man. Go back and pop some of this stuff in, man. So yeah, man.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.